Well, this hour, as we continue talking with Raymond Moody about all his works, including Making Sense of Nonsense, we'll take your phone calls as well on Coast to Coast AM. We are back with Dr. Raymond Moody and your phone calls this hour as we talk about his latest work, Making Sense of Nonsense. His websites are all linked up at coasttocoastam.com. You continue to, you know, research, investigate. You don't give up, Raymond. What drives you?
Well, you know, back to the story we were talking about, George, when I was a kid, about 8 years old, looking through the telescope, I realized that you naturally are curious about what sizes this thing we're in, right? So you have two options. Either it ends in a wall or else it goes on forever. But when you go out to the wall in your mind, you say, well, just a minute here. Doesn't there have to be something on the other side of a wall? So the point is that either option we can give seems nonsensical, that it comes to an end in a wall or that it goes on forever. So at the same time, I was reading Dr. Seuss and Lewis Carroll, and I began to realize that there's different types of nonsense. So I went on, I got my PhD in philosophy. Then years later, I went to medical school, and as soon as I got in medical school, I started realizing that patients who are ill from all kinds of conditions, like delirium or psychosis or sometimes severe stress or various kinds of intoxication, like mercury intoxication, will talk nonsense. And I realized that the types of nonsense that sick patients talk have the same structure as the nonsense that Dr. Seuss and Lewis Carroll and so on write deliberately. So what I realized is nonsense is nonsense, whether it's deliberate or involuntary, right? And so what that means is that it has its own structure. And if you carry that line of thought out, what you see in the end is this is precisely why we haven't been able to come up with a genuinely rational proof of an afterlife yet, that this is the blocking factor. But now I've broken that blocking factor down. We can open up our minds in such a way that we can now see how to think logically about things that don't make sense. And when somebody goes through that process, there's simple exercises in this book that it open up faculties of your mind that you don't know you have. And when somebody subsequently has a near-death experience, they will be able to talk about it to the rest of us in an entirely new way because they have these new faculties of their minds open. And I know this sounds implausible. However, I'm also completely aware that this is going to work, that as people read this book, it's already happening. People who said, I heard about this, and I thought, no way. And then I went through it, and oh, my God, you're right. And so I'm relaxed. I mean, this sounds crazy now, but in a year or so, it's not going to sound crazy at all. We have here a whole new way of investigating near-death experiences. And it sounds now just as implausible as the near-death experience it sounded in 1975.
Mm-hmm.
But we're on the way to a whole new way of thinking about it.
Well,
like I said, there's lots of practical values to it.
It's not just for near-death experiencers.
No, this is for doctors, for attorneys, for ministers.
People in college.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, a lot of the great spiritual texts and spiritual practices have to do with nonsense. You think, for example, glossolalia, or speaking in unknown tongues, or koans, right? What is the sound of one hand clapping? So there are lots of spiritual practices that involve this. And one of the ways that shamans, by the way, had of projecting themselves over to the other side was they had shaman songs. And what these were, that they were elaborate combinations of nonsense syllables and meaningless refrains put together with meaningful language, such that the combination was more powerful than either alone. And that was the way that shamans altered their minds so that they could go from their point of view into altered states of consciousness, and that they thought of as going over to the other world.
And you had a personal shared death experience, so I want to get into in a second, Raymond, but let's take a few calls here while we're getting them rolling in for you. Mike in Denver, take it away, Michael.
Hey, George, thanks so much for having me tonight. Dr. Moody, I'm a big, big fan of your work. I highly, highly recommend your book, Life After Life, to any millennials out there. That's my age group. It changed my life, and I think it will change yours, too. I did have a quick question for you, Dr. Moody. So the book, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's called 23 Miles Down. It's by a man named Peter Weiss, and he has the theory that hell is literally in the center of the core of the earth. I wanted to get your take on that, and also what were some books that really had a big impact on your life? Thank you.
Okay.
Well, I tell you, I just don't know.
I don't know where hell is, Raymond.
Yeah,
do you?
I don't know where hell is, or even if it has a location. But in terms of books that have had a big impact on my life, you know, this is going to sound funny to you, but to a lot of people my age, I think one of the people who had more impact on me than anybody else was a Disney artist named Carl Barks.
Huh.
And when I was a kid, he wrote the Donald Duck and Uncle Scrooge comics. He was the guy who invented Uncle Scrooge. And among people who've been influenced with him was Steven Spielberg and George Lucas have both said that he created their whole sense of adventure and so on. And they've created,
I love that,
taken scenes from his comic books and their movies and so on. And then the other was Plato. I know it sounds so old-fashioned, but you know, the reason that Plato is still in print after 2,300 years is that he just is a really amazing writer. He was the first person that we have written, whose writings that we have, who talked about near-death experiences, and that's how I got interested in them.
Yeah. One of the books I loved, Raymond, was The Magic of Believing by Claude Bristol.
I haven't heard of that one, but I'm going to look it up.
You look that up. It's a small little red book. Still in print. You can get it in paperback probably on Amazon. It's an easy read. You can read it in just about a night. But it's really, it's just about your inner self and how you can make things happen. It's really special.
Great.
Now with yours, Making Sense of Nonsense, mm-hmm. Tell us the most important aspect of what you want somebody to learn from that book.
That is, and I am really serious about this, as a psychiatrist and a philosophy professor, I can tell you as you're listening to this that you have six important powers of your mind that you don't know you have, and that there's a simple way to open them up so that you will be a more perceptive doctor or minister or advertiser or psychotherapist. I mean, there is a whole dimension of language out there that we are unaware of because we have a sort of collective cognitive deficit. And that once you go through a procedure, you can see that your mind is limited in these very specific dimensions. And once you open these new channels up, it makes scientific questions seem different. It makes spiritual questions seem different. It gives entirely new ways of altering your mind. You know what glossolalia, or speaking in unknown tongues, is? It's a combination of nonsense syllables drawn from the speaker's own language, put together in a way to avoid meaningful combinations and to avoid grammar. And what you don't have to be in an ecstatic state to start speaking in unknown tongues. You can just do it by releasing your inhibitions. But once you keep on doing it for a long period of time, or for a period of time, it opens up a fascinating ecstatic experience. Or, as I mentioned earlier, koans. You know, the point of a koan is that somebody asks the question, what is the sound of one hand clapping? What you first try to solve this by logic, but eventually that flips you over into a whole different channel of consciousness in your mind. And so what this book is, it's a general explanation of that whole dimension of language it's around us everywhere, but we just don't notice it. But once you start noticing it, then you're in a different world. I mean, I had a wonderful old friend, and he was when I was a first-year philosophy professor, I was 24 years old when I got my PhD in philosophy.
Were you really? Good for you.
Yeah, and then in another 6 years, I had an MD. So I had two doctoral degrees before I was 31, plus 3 years of being a college professor. And, you know, at our age, we can look back and there's something terribly wrong with somebody who would have two doctoral degrees by the age. And I was, you know, I spent my life with my nose in a book. But what I'm getting at here is that we have a capacity of our mind that we've neglected, and that there are simple ways to open this up where it will, once we get this done, it will be a whole different world, George, in thinking about life after death. This is going to open up entirely new ways of investigating near-death experiences, for example. One of them that's already gone on, and I know that you know Lisa Smart.
Yeah.
And basically what happened when I was in medical school.
She's been on the show, too.
Yeah. When I was in medical school, I realized that a lot of times in the terminal phase of life, people talk nonsense. Now, a lot of people listening to us right now, will say, oh, yeah, I remember that, Grandpa, and so on, right? Well, what happens is that in the last few days, hours, or minutes of life, people start talking nonsense. But if you ask the people left behind, like the relatives, they'll say, yeah, I knew even when Grandpa was saying those things that it was nonsense. But that somewhere in the back of my mind, I sort of related to it. Now, I can guarantee you a lot of people listening to this right now are going to say, yeah, right on. Well, now what we have a way of doing is that since we now know that there's lots of different types of nonsense, I've identified over 70 different patterns. Each one has its own specific effect on the mind. And what we can do now is that by recording and the kinds of utterances or that very enigmatic language that people speak as they are dying, we're able now to recognize the patterns in it and to flash forward, assuming, as I kind of do, that what this signifies is that in those last few hours or minutes or days, that people are talking nonsense because they're trying to put into words states of consciousness that are transcendent, like that signify that they are passing through into some other state of existence. What we now have is a method where we can track, assuming that the mind goes into a transcendent state during the dying process, now we have a method actually to track it through it as it goes past that barrier. And I know these things sound very counterintuitive in 2020. In 2022, they're not going to sound counterintuitive because I can see already this is spreading. I've got lots and lots of very strong reactions to this already.
It could be the norm. Let's go to Jeremy in Jamestown, North Dakota. Welcome to the program. Hi, Jeremy.
Hello, George. How are you doing,
Jeremy? Okay, we're great. Thank you.
Just over 16 years ago, I was in a terrible car accident.
Oh, boy.
I was in a coma for 2.5 months afterwards. And I want to know why I was sent back to this realm.
What do you remember, Jeremy? Do you remember anything of that near-death experience?
I remember I was walking up a mountain trail with my, who is now my ex-wife, but my current wife at the time, hand in hand. And as we were approaching the top, an avalanche started to come down, and I pushed her in a crevice in the cliff. And I, as I was hit by rocks and falling off the cliff, I heard a voice that said, "You're needed in on Earth still."
To go back.
Yeah, that's wonderful, Jeremy. I've heard thousands of stories like that, and it's, yeah, I know that it's very important and meaningful to you too, and I can just assure you that there's lots of people listening to this right now who know where you've been.
Oh, yeah. Most people don't want to come back. Why not, Raymond?
Well, because people say that no matter how articulate you are, no matter how many languages you speak, that this state of consciousness is just so powerful that you cannot describe it. They say it's like complete peace, love, comfort, joy, and yet, as Jeremy is telling us, you can't just sort of decide when you want to go. It's even when things are tough here, you've got to bear this out, because as it comes to its natural end, it all kind of does make sense. It's, this was something that, not being a religious person, I still can't tell you that I believe that there's life after death. I'm just
really told, after all these years, well, and yeah, all these because, research books.
Well, because it's, what is belief? You know, what I would say is, I don't know what else to say except that there's life after death. When I don't know if you know Jeff O'Donnell, for example.
No.
Or Jeff Olson. And Jeff O'Donnell. And Jeff Olson, some years ago, had a horrible car crash in which he lost his leg. And his wife was killed instantly. One of his children was killed. And another severely injured. And so he survived. And so later on, when he got to telling the emergency room physician, Dr.
Hold on for a second, Raymond. We'll get that story when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Lucy Pringle joins us to talk about her work, The Energies of Crop Circles. We're going to go live to the United Kingdom for her, so make sure you're part of Coast to Coast. We're going to come back in a moment with final questions for Dr. Raymond Moody. His latest book is called Making Sense of Nonsense. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you, our final segment with our very special guest, Dr. Raymond Moody. Raymond, you were talking about the case of Jeff Olson, and he was on our program a couple of years ago, but I want you to tell everybody again about this incredible accident.
Jeff had a horrible accident, auto accident. His wife was killed instantly. His leg was crushed and had to be amputated. He lost one of his children in the wreck, and he had a near-death experience. And one of the emergency room physicians at the hospital when he came in was Dr. Jeff O'Donnell, who's an emergency room specialist. And so when Jeff talked to Dr. O'Donnell about his near-death experience, Dr. Jeff O'Donnell said that when Jeff Olson was in the surgery, that Dr. Dr. O'Donnell was talking with Jeff's wife, who had been killed in the accident. And so what I was getting at is, you know, when the doctor starts empathically co-participating in the patient's near-death experience, which is a very common thing. I hear this from doctors all the time, although doctors are, you know, understandably reluctant to talk about this, but it's a reality. It happens all the time. So what I was getting at is that I don't know what else to say except that to my utter surprise, being a person who didn't come from a religious tradition, it looks to me, yeah, like there is a life after death. Now, if you ask me if I have internalized that or made it into a belief, it's still just totally astonishing to me. But
absolutely.
I don't know what else to say. And that we now have a way, incredible as it may seem, counterintuitive as it may seem for now, but this is opening up, and in the not-too-distant future, we're going to have an entirely new way of looking at this. And eventually, what will happen? There will be a number of people who've been exposed to this new logic, this new way of thinking about nonsense, and they will subsequently have a near-death experience, and their accounts, their descriptions of it will be different from the ones that we have already, okay? And so by comparing those two different types and knowing the difference between them is that we'll be able to sort of hone in on the afterlife. It's kind of like triangulation. You know, we all know that it's 4.3 light years to Proxima Centauri, right? Well, how did they figure that one out? Well, they couldn't put a odometer on a homing pigeon's leg and send it out there. So how did they figure out? Well, the way that works is they knew by the 20s that, say, there's 186 million miles across the orbit of the Earth around the Sun. So when the Earth was in one position, they carefully measured the angles to certain nearby stars, then waited exactly 6 months when the Earth was on the opposite side of the Sun and measured the angles again, and you could see there would be a minute difference, right? And so since the base is known, the 186 million miles, that enables a calculation to be made of the distance out there. Now we have an equivalent method with the near-death experience. We can prepare people in advance to think about it in a new way, and when we get enough of them, we can compare that account, those kinds of accounts, with the existing kinds of accounts so that this will show us the difference. And so that's where this is headed.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Matt is in Salt Lake City, Utah. Welcome, Matt. Go ahead.
Yes, good evening. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, you're welcome.
I just wanted to thank both of you for always having great guests, and tell Dr. Moody that just listening to this, I've had an extreme moment of clarity. I had a near-death experience about a decade ago, and just by the way you've described the making sense of nonsense, it almost triggered something in my way of thinking to be able to describe the experience I had in different ways. Is this something that people who've already had near-death experiences will be able to read?
Well, then that's an interesting question.
It is, and I don't know the answer to it. And I just don't know. But I would think
it would help them. I think it would help them.
I would think so, and unless people have already sort of, I just don't know. But that's a wonderful question, Matt, and I've wondered about that myself. But I'm doing it now prospectively. But it will be interesting to see whether people who've had a near-death experience and then read about this, whether it will help them understand and articulate their experience better. And I hope it does. I hope it does.
We've got first-time caller Michael in Los Angeles. Hi, Michael. Go ahead, sir.
Well, good evening. I wanted to tell you that I had the privilege of being a student of Dr. Moody in 1969 in Greenville, North Carolina.
All right.
You may, in fact, remember you suggested to the class once that we couldn't be in the class because from the dorm to the class, there was a halfway point. From the dorm to that halfway point, there was a halfway point. There were an infinite number of halfway points that would take an infinite amount of time, which means we could never make it.
And I believe that I saw you in Las Vegas a few years ago, right?
Not only that, but then our paths crossed again in Charlottesville because I was in law school and you were in medical school.
Yes.
You hosted me at your house and you told me how you had attempted in writing Life After Life to impose a scientific methodology on a subject that somewhat defied scientific methodology, but you did the best you could with that limitation. I'm wondering if you attempted to impose a scientific methodology in your study of nonsense.
Well, I would say a rational method, and I would really appreciate to what you think about this book, because, I remember very well you were talking about Zeno's paradox, and you told me, you're an attorney, right? And you told me that that had really sort of stuck with you over the years. And I think that what this book does is it magnifies that. This is like basically that's carrying on the thoughts that I was talking about at that and when I made that comment.
Small world, isn't it, Raymond?
It is, yeah.
Very, very small. Michael, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Yeah, Michael,
that.
Thank you so much, man. And it's really wonderful to hear from you. I haven't talked since we were in Las Vegas a few years ago. But
that's right.
All right, thank you, Michael. Appreciate it. Next up is Elisa in Portland, Oregon. Hi, Elise, go ahead.
Hi, George. Dr. Hey. Moody, I'm extremely honored to be speaking with you and getting to ask a question of once in a lifetime from an expert and a living legend. Okay. So my grandmother was very inspirational in my early reading habits, and your book, your first book, was one of the first books that she ever had me read, and it's still in my library, the original printing. Anyway, so my question was wanting to know if you have any thoughts or information about not just people having shared a near-death experience with their pets, but maybe veterinarians, because they're not as close to the pet as the person who may be sharing that with them might be?
You know, I don't. I just don't. Really, comparatively, I've had very few near-death experiences where people mention their pets, and I'm often curious about that, because I know, as I do a lot of grief therapy.
Well, and you're really the expert, Raymond, on the human near-death experience.
I am, but also it's like in my practice of grief counseling, I've seen over the years that people are often very embarrassed about grieving their pets, and they feel like, oh, now people are going to think I'm weak or whatever. But people have very, very deep grieving experiences of pets, and it's just part of us. And I do wonder about the question you're asking about as to that kind of thing with pets. But a couple of cases, yes, but in terms of a veterinarian, no, I haven't had that. Anybody who's a veterinarian mentioned that to me.
We've got Bill in Williamsburg, Virginia now. Hello, William. Go ahead, sir.
Hi. How you guys doing?
Okay, great.
I hate to be too critical, but I have to be because I know the Bible more, and I know you're not a Christian. But it does warn, God warns us against contacting the dead spirits. And all that dead stuff, I don't know what you're trying to prove. Even if you proved everything about death, don't you want to prove God exists? Isn't that the Bible tells us we need to seek God, not the dead? The dead have already passed. There's demons that can contact you that pretend to be relatives, ex-relatives or whatever. My mother passed away.
Let's get his take on that.
What I say is, to me, God is a relationship. I'm not a religious ideologue, and I understand a lot of people are. And, you know, and I may be wrong, but I'm just going to go on living, assuming that since I'm built to be a curious person, that it's okay for me to go on and exercise my curiosity.
Well, and you're entitled to your views. You're entitled to your views, to be sure. And, you know, and Bill may very well be right, you know that, as you just said. Next up, let's go to Frank in Alabama. Hi, Frank. Take it away.
Thank you for taking my call, George.
Sure thing.
Dr. Moody, I got to say, from that last quarter, God bless the both of you. I had a near-death experience a few years back, which I mentioned to you once before, George, and with critical, and long story, but
right.
I saw the darkness, and I also saw the, I went through the light tunnel, and I literally went to the doors of paradise, and I hope the last caller is listening. And I saw the majesty, and I saw it, and it's pulsating, it's the sun pulsating a billion times, and it's love, 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 love. And most of all, what I saw up there was animals everywhere. Not a lot of human beings, animals. And like you said earlier, George, I didn't want to come back. However, it's a long story that you don't have enough time for, and it pushed me back. And now at 61 years old, and I've been in and around the entertainment business for 55 years.
Wow.
I'm like, you know what? I have to do something. There's something more. And since that experience, there's a light that this majesty gave me to go back with. And it's been painful. You know, I lost my lungs, my kidneys, they came back. Tumors, prostate cancer, healed. So what is this purpose for living, Dr. Moody? Is, I guess it's to live, you know, they say a bridge back to life. And it's pretty exciting. And who knows, you know, to say I love what you just said, George. And by the way, Dr. Moody, when I was laying in bed for months with this brain hemorrhage and I came back, I was in this apartment in the middle of nowhere. And I listened to George. I know George doesn't like compliments, but I listened to him every night. And it was part of my healing. And I still go through this, but I just keep thinking, my kids are like, oh, you were on drugs, and like, you know, disbelief. But it was probably the event of my life, and I've been through quite a bit. And I'm amazed of what's to come. And what I learned is that it's what's in your heart, like truly what's in your heart. Is there empathy for everybody? And it's like, you know, I grew up in New York in the 60s. So, you know, you kind of seen a few things, you know?
Oh, sure.
And empathy. And it's like, wow, the paradise, the door opened, and I was like, and there it was.
Well, let's get Raymond's reaction, as we only have a few minutes left, and then I'll give out his website to everybody. Go ahead, Ray.
Yeah, again, Frank, this is just very, you know, I've heard so many people, and you entered into a state that you find it very difficult to describe, and I think it's wonderful that you still have that curiosity about what's this all about, as I do too. I've reached this point of sort of confidence that, yeah, to my surprise, there is something after this, and yet I'm also aware, as you were saying, Frank, that we can't know the full picture from this state that we're in, and so it's exciting. I mean, I don't want to die in a painful or unpleasant way. I am afraid of pain, but I've reached this point where I'm not afraid of death. And I do sort of expect that, yeah, when I die, there will be this transformation of consciousness into this other realm, and also that I just can't really fully conceptualize it from the point of view that I'm in when I'm alive. So it's very exciting.
It sure is. Raymond, the websites we've got for you are lifeafterlife.com and glimpsesofeternity.com. Any more?
That's it.
All right, my friend. And good luck with this book, Making Sense Out of Nonsense. Actually, it makes a lot of sense.
It does. And thanks to the people at Llewellyn Publishers. They did a really great job on on editing this, and I really hope people will take a look at it because and read it through, because as incredible as it sounds, this is real. This really does work.
They are good people. Dr. Raymond Moody, he is the best, folks. And you had a chance to chat with him and listen to him. In a moment, we are coming back with Lucy Pringle as we go live to the United Kingdom to talk about her work in crop formations.